Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Stormkeep. My name is Paul, and today I have James with me here. We are going to talk about a game that we played for our local store league of, unfortunately, Stormcast versus Stormcast. Somehow we got matched into each other round one, but it was a really, really entertaining game, and I think there was a lot of interesting concepts that we can show off here.
Yeah, for sure. 30-player league, round one. What are the chances of actually getting paired into each other? Well, pretty well. One, 10 players in that league are part of the same team, and they all decide to register under the same team name.
Yeah, well, I'm the only one who registered as Team Stormkeep, so that's what I deserve, right? Before we get started with the battle report, I want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Kaiju Gaming Lounge. They are based in Orlando, Florida. They are the ones who do all the prizes for all of our wonderful painting contests, and they also stock our merch. We have new dice coming to the store soon, and we still stock these 7-inch, 9-inch range markers. These are perfect if you're playing Thunderstrike units, like, for example, Grand Hammers. With the Lord Imperitant, they get a 7-inch deep strike, so you can use the 7-inch side to measure that out, and then 9-inch for all your other deep strikes and teleports. This also works great for Starborn armies because they get the 7-inch deep strike in reserve as well. So if you're interested, check them out. They could definitely use your support, and they have been great to us on the podcast here. So give them a shout. I guess the first thing we should talk about, James, are the lists that we brought. So these were not done with, these were blind picks, obviously. How the store league functions, you're essentially signing up for a game ahead of time with an opponent. You don't know who the opponent is. You do know the battle plan, but you don't know each other's lists, right? And then there's random pairings from there. So we both submitted these lists. Why don't we break down your list first? So I guess for people who aren't familiar with your list, with the previous version that you were running, do you mind if I break down the main combo here?
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. So this is a two-hammer list. That's what we kind of call this because there's two main hammer units. You'll notice the Tempesters and Evocators and Dracolines are the primary damage dealers in this list. Everything else is kind of there to score battle tactics and support those two units. The primary combo there is the Domitan Storm Coven giving strike first to the Evocators on Celestial Dracolines. What that enables is anytime your opponent charges into you, you fight them first, which is really, really good on Evocators, on Dracolines in particular, because they do a ton of damage, but they are quite fragile. So usually if they get charged and hit first, they tend to die. But if you get to strike first defensively, you usually wipe out whatever is going to attack you from the combination of all of their rider attacks, the mounts, and then the Mortal Wound Blast. So very, very tough thing to crack. You've paired this with a Lord Castellan to give them plus one save, which makes them even more durable against shooting and whatever melee damage does squeak through. And then you've got the four Tempesters usually dropping into play or being translocated up from the Knight Relictor in order to shoot down screens, shoot down key targets, and let the Evocators hit what they want. And the final piece to the puzzle is Louch on the Soulseeker, which is usually going to be cast out of unbinding range, so your opponent won't get to interact with you. And that allows any wizard unit, in this case the Celestial Dracolines, to move 18 inches in the hero phase and then move 12 inches normally afterwards, which gives them a absolutely monstrous threat range. No corner of the table is safe when you're playing against this list, and you have to assume that all of the casting and teleporting and everything is going to go off. Like, that's the only way to play around it. So it's a very, very scary combo, and then you also have the reserve and chaff units needed in case somebody has fewer drops than you and decides to hit you first before you get your buffs up, for example. So the Griffhounds, the Vanquishers, Liberators, all that stuff, like the extra four screens you're running here, compared to my list, which only has, I think, two screening units, really. So you can definitely see there's some trade-offs there.
Yeah, we're definitely running sort of like inverse philosophies here, where I'm running four screens and two hammers. You got two screens and four hammers.
Yeah, and usually what we say about the Stormcast Mirror matchup is that it's the weirdest matchup in the game, which is a big thing to say because there's a lot of weird armies in Age of Sigmar, and Storm. You'd think any mirror matchup would be pretty standard, but the way the Stormcast matchup usually works, like, let's say if things aren't really weird, it's usually just a game about trading hammers, right? If it's whoever has more hammers alive at the end of the battle tends to win the game, even if that's just one hammer alive. Like, if you have one unit of long strikes and the opponent only has liberators left, you just win because there's nothing those liberators can do to threaten long strikes.
Yeah, so this sort of stems from the Celestial Vindicators Paw Patrol that I was running a few weeks ago. Wrote a little battle report there with up against Kyle there. That was our first guest for the about these about report battle reports. Big difference with this list is that I want Hammers of Sigmar, just because as much as I like the Vindicators, I don't think they're too viable, like if you're going to any sort of like organized play event. The Exploding Sixes on the Dracolines is fine to make them like super aggro, but you just lack durability, and like I personally, I think every ward save matters. So like even if it's as simple as a 6-up ward. And the other thing as well is what Hammers of Sigmar allowed me to do was drop a unit of Vanquishers to just slot into Pesters for battle line, which is ultimately a huge thing because it comes in the battle tactic choices, especially with Flood in the Maelstrom relying on a battle line unit to charge and a hero to charge, and at least one of those units being within 3 inches of an enemy unit.
Yeah, led into the Maelstrom. Yeah, Tempesters are really good for that tactic because they're durable and have tons of wounds, so they're likely to survive a combat phase.
Yeah, exactly. And even if you're worried about charging them in and overkilling a target, you don't necessarily have to charge every single model into a combat. Like if you have your Tempesters in a line of like a single line of four, you can just kind of move them straight to where only one model is adjacent to the unit that they're charging into, so that way you can minimize the attacks going into that unit. Other considerations for my list to where it's changed was Grand Strat was changed to Overshadow. Again, because I have that durable battle line unit, I could probably have it sit in the center at some point. And they have the mobility to or the speed to get over there as well if need be. With the extra points, I decided to bring in two squads of Griffhounds, just because they're a nice, cheap, widescreen. And their Warning Cry ability actually does have some play with Tempesters. So I'm curious to actually try that out once it's relevant in a game.
Yeah, there will definitely be matchups in this league where it's going to come in handy. We've got people playing Slaves to Darkness, which can revive things with Ravagers. We've got Seraphon in the mix. We've got a few Soul Blight. So there's going to be opportunities where those Griffhounds are going to get value for sure. Even if all they do is deny people setting up and within 12 inches, that's a tactical victory, which is great. So it seemed like an unfavorable matchup just from our two lists. But I guess I should just explain my list before we go too far, right? So mine is called Cometfall. This is an archetype we've been tinkering with for a while, and I kind of just wanted to see how it would do in the season. Knowing the battle plans ahead of time, this was an odd pick because the main difference between this list and many Stormcast lists are the three Knight Vexillors. They have an ability in the hero phase. You can pick a point within 24 inches, and then each enemy unit within 6 inches of that point takes D3 mortal wounds. And this works great if you have deployments where you can be 18 inches away from each other. But when you're 22 inches away, like what happened in our battle here, the Knight Vexillors are not able to reliably drop their meteor on many targets, and they don't deal that kind of crippling damage that you need them to deal. So I'm not. Maybe it was a mistake bringing this list into this round in particular. Maybe I should have paid more attention to the deployments. But the list I submitted was I had the Entaurian Acolytes Battalion trying to get additional Primal Dice because I want to cast Merciless Blizzard with my Lord Arcanum, as well as the Malevolent Maelstrom. So I've got these two powerful spells that I really want to cast every single turn, and I want the extra Primal Dice in order to do it. My general in this case was a Knight Encantor because I don't have a priest in this list. I don't have a translocate. And the reason I chose this is because I wanted something that could score spellcasting savant as a grand strategy, because I was looking at the list and there's nothing in here that can really score any of the current grand strategies. You know, I don't want to be limited tactically. I want to be able to throw away my Vanquishers, throw away my Tempesters and my Fulminators. I don't want to be forced to keep them alive because I feel like if I have the opportunity to trade them in to win the game, that's going to be better than keeping them alive potentially and scoring a grand strategy, if that makes any sense. I'm obviously referencing Overshadow here. That would have been my other pick. And that is what you picked, in fact. So Overshadow requires keeping all your battle line alive and destroying, or sorry, at least one of your battle line on the table and destroying all of your opponent's battle line. Now this is starting army, so even though I do have Call for Aid in my list, and I did manage to resurrect my Vanquishers, they don't count towards Overshadow. Well, I mentioned the three Night Vex lores in my list. I mentioned the Encanter. I mentioned the Lord Arcanum. The Lord Arcanum is fun because he gets an extra 6-inch movement on the Malevolent Maelstrom. Unfortunately, it didn't really come up this time because I wanted to cast Merciless Blizzard every time instead. So that didn't end up being relevant. I fitted the list with two screening units. I've got 5 Vanguard Hunters and 5 Vanquishers. I've got a block of 4 Tempesters, a smaller block of 2 Fulminators, 3 Evocators on Dracolines, and 3 Longstrike Crossbows. And then with the remaining 20 points, I had a choice between, you know, upgrading my Vanquishers to Vindictors or just taking a Deus Arcanum. And I ended up taking the Deus just to see how it would work. I figured that might be a fun combo if I have the Knight Encantor. He's my general. He has Eater of Magic, so he can, after he unbinds on a 5-up, he can force an enemy to forget the spell. And I figured if you're on the Deus with an extra unbind and Locus Focus, that's 3 unbinds per turn. Maybe you can do something with that. So didn't expect I'd be doing a Stormcast Mirror when I picked this list. I would have definitely picked a different list, but got to play with what you submit, right?
Yeah, I will say going into this one and seeing the pairing and the list, I was kind of I was dreading playing this game, but it turned out to be like we're alluding to, it was a little beyond our expectations.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the battle plan that we were on. First round is Fountains of Frost. This has standard objective control and scoring, which is, you know, control 1, control 2, control more, and 2 points for a battle tactic. But there are some notable features, the main one being that it is 22 inches apart, right? This is a long deployment, and this allows you to very easily keep your wizards out of range for unbinding. The shallow territories really make it easy to score battle tactics like Intimidate the Invaders and Surround and Destroy. There's got a cool gimmick here where if you have a locus controlling an objective, it counts as 10 models, or contesting an objective, I should say. And that ended up being very relevant for our game. The final gimmick on this battle plan is if there are 3 or more units contesting an objective at the start of the battle shock phase, you roll a dice, and on a 4+, the objective explodes, and each unit on the objective suffers D3 mortal wounds. So you never want to put, you know, 2 foot heroes and a battle line unit on the same objective. You want to be very careful about how many units you have contesting it, and always assuming that your opponent, you know, can get that third unit on there. So it's a very high risk battle plan. If you're not careful with your positioning, it can really backfire on you. The first time I played this battle plan was with my brother in his Lumineth army, and he accidentally left 3 of his support heroes on an objective. And by the end of round 1, they were all dead because it just exploded twice and destroyed them. And it was pretty brutal. I thought, you know, my list is not really tailored to this battle plan in particular. The wide deployments really make it awkward for Knight Vexilor because opponents can put a lot of their units on the left side or the right side. And because it's a long deployment as well, more than 22 inches apart, the hero phase blast from the Vexilors doesn't often reach everything in the opponent's army. So I felt a little handicapped in this with my list. How did you feel about it going in before we talk about deployment?
I mean, when I was deploying, and you'll see in the pictures to come, but I was generally trying to stay outside of that, stay outside of 30 inches of Vexilors, and then just keep my deployment wide. Anything that was important, like my casters, obviously would be behind that 30 inch mark. And I just kind of left you, or I'd leave you with trying to hit my Dracolines or my Dreadhounds if they were in range. Pretty easy for me to get onto the objectives with what I had on the table. But the one thing I'll note about this battle plan in particular is that against an elite versus elite list, I don't find that explosion gimmick comes up too often.
No, if you're very careful, it doesn't come up very often. And I think we were both quite careful in this game. So it didn't, I don't think it actually came up at all, but
yeah.
That speaks to just how much we had to pay attention to it, right? There were a few times I remember where we're like, oh, is this unit on it? And we said, no, it's, we said that it wasn't on it specifically, just in case something, you know, gets nudged during the game.
Yep.
Okay, so let's talk about deployment. We use the Florida Terrain Pack, which you can find a link to in the description below. If you missed the previous battle report we did, I'll explain how this battle pack works. How the terrain pack works. So it does a couple of things compared to standard terrain layouts. One of them is that it has templates for terrain so that you can standardize the distance and the amount of cover you get and how You can check if things are within an inch. Like, it's just a lot easier to determine if you're in cover or not. For example, if you look at the centerpieces there with those stone bridges, it's very hard to tell when you are or are not wholly within that because of the awkward shape of them. Having a nice template like that makes it very obvious when you're in terrain, when you get the benefit of the terrain feature, and so on. The second thing this terrain pack does is it allows the defender to place mystical terrain instead of just randomly rolling for it. So in this case, I was the defender, and I placed down two arcane tokens. You can see them in the middle. You can see the middle right piece on my side on the bottom and the middle left piece on top. Then I put down two damned pieces, which allow you to take D3 mortal wounds in your hero phase and then get plus one hit until your next turn. These are really nice for units like Dracolines or Fulminators or Tempesters who have five or six wounds per model. Therefore, the D3 can never kill one of them. And you just get plus one hit that doesn't require using all-out attack. It gets through minus one hit effects. It frees you up to use all-out defense whenever you need to and still do your maximum damage, which feels really good. I then also place two Wildwood tokens. And the way we use the Wildwood tokens are that they're not like the Sylvaneth Wildwood. In this case, if line of sight passes over the woods in any way, the line of sight is just blocked and you can't see each other. The reason for doing this is I like creating some line of sight blocking stuff throughout the middle of the board. That way, for example, you can't just sit on one side of the table and blast me. I can, you know, position appropriately across from that and measure out your movement and measure out your potential threat ranges and then try to use that to my advantage. Now, that didn't end up being too relevant against your list. It actually worked against me, which we'll see. But it's, I really like using this terrain pack, and I'm going to keep doing it. If you guys are interested, you can click the link in the video description. It'll take you to the rules page for this. And I believe Kaiju Gaming Lounge sells a pack of tokens and these MDF cutouts that you can use to standardize your terrain. So let's look at the deployments here. I deployed second. You were the attacker, so you put down first. What was your first drop? Was it the Relictor?
Yeah, usually my go-to is to drop down the Battle Reg with the Relictor and Dogs. Just because it's a bit of a... It doesn't really give too much information out from the get-go.
Mm-hmm. Now, you put them pretty much on the edge of the board, right? The mat is a little bit bigger than the standard size, but that is the edge of the board. So why did you decide to put the Dogs and the Relictor on the edge?
So the Relictor was at the edge because, like I said earlier, I wanted to stay outside of potential... Like, if you put your Vexilar at the 11-inch deployment mark in your territory, you'd still be outside 30 inches of potential Vex bomb. Same thing with the Griffhounds. They should just be outside of that threat range. And then they were closer to the edges of the table just in case I needed to set up for a Surround and Destroy at any point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, this is what I was talking about earlier. Because this is such a wide deployment, 22 inches, or such a long deployment, I should say, it's 22 inches between player territories. Even if I put my Vexilors right on the edge of my deployment, you can just hug the edge of the board and be out of 30 inches and take no damage from my Vexilors on the first turn. So that was a good move. I did respond to that deployment by putting the Knight Vexilor on the right side. You can see here. I had a very particular reason for doing this, but I don't think it was obvious to you what I was doing until it was too late. So let's talk through your deployment, because you did end up having less drops than me, and then I'll talk through mine. So what were you thinking with the rest of this?
So the rest of the deployment is pretty straightforward for my list. It is across three drops. So what else did I have listed?
You had four, because you have Acolytes, Battle Regiment, and Redemption Brotherhood.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is I would have just followed up with... we alternated drops with between the Knight and Cantor and Castellum. So just setting up those outside of the 30 inches again to not be viable targets to be chipped at. And you would have responded with putting out some other models as well. And then with my heroes, just having them in within buff ranges of my Dracolines and my Dracolines set up in this little pie plate formation. So that way, if I had or if I got Louchen off, they could all just immediately embark and go up the table.
Yeah, you've got this cardboard cutout sketched out with bases drawn on it so that you know exactly where to put your models in case you cast Louch on. And since all your wizards are more than 30 inches away, you can see there at the top of the screen noted more than 30. None of my wizards are in range to unbind your Aether Shock or your Mystic Shield or your Celestial Blades or anything else that you would cast. Hoarfrost, Azurite Halo, all that stuff I'm out of range of. And you positioned all your Dracolene so that they could receive all the buffs from all your wizards, and all of it would be cast out of unbinding range. I did put one wizard, the Knight Vexillor with the Arcane Tome. I put him in range to unbind the Dracolene, just in case you decided to go first and you tried to score magical dominance. I would at least be able to, try to deny an empower on the Dracolene, or at least you wouldn't try to cast it, and that would be okay with me too, right? Like, I don't want you to have as many buffs as possible.
Yeah, exactly. And that was sort of my thing as well, is with the aggressive cap boat deployment, you kind of have to accept the fact that you will be within binding range on the Empower. And frankly, for me, Empower is nice to get off, but it's not really the end of the world if it doesn't go off. It just means that it kind of secures. It's kind of an overkill factor more than anything, I find, because I find even if they've been, even if they lose efficiency due to debuffs like minus one hit, minus one wound, Dracolene can still smack pretty hard.
Now, when you finish your deployment, you put Vanquishers, Liberators, and Tempestors all in reserve. And that gave me a pretty good idea of that you are opening up the door to aggression, right? Because if you didn't put them on the table, I could have dropped in my Tempestors and done a lot of damage with just shooting, right? I could have cast a lot of spells while out of your unbinding range. It could have been really nasty for you. So that allowed me to. It gave me the final kick I needed to put my Tempestors in reserve, because I actually had them on the table at first, kind of before I finalized my deployment. I took them off, and I think, okay, sorry, let me talk through the rest of my deployment first. So I put Vanguard Hunters and Vanquishers on the table, as you can see down in the bottom right corner. The Vanquishers are more than 3 inches away from the Vexillers, from the front line of the Vexillers. And what that means is, if your Tempestors with 12-inch shooting drop into play, they have to be more than 9 inches from the Vexillers, and that means more than 12 inches away from the Vanquishers. Because what you really wanted to do in this game was drop your Tempestors in, shoot my screen, run past it with the Dracolene, who have basically table-wide threat range. And then I also made sure that everything that I was protecting behind my Vanquishers, for example, my Lord Arcanum and my Long Strikes, they were more than 3 inches off the front line. That way, even if your Dracolene did charge, they could only kill the screens. They couldn't kill any important units that were behind them with their Lightning Arc ability, which selects a unit within 3 inches and just deletes it with mortal wounds. So I initially had some Tempestors behind that line of Vanquishers. My thought there was, okay, you're probably going to go first because of all the screens you've put into reserve. And I want to make sure that I have a very good Unleash Hell for when you charge in. So my thought was, bait you to come in with the Dracolene and then Unleash Hell on you. I put two Fulminators on the side there in cover to contest the left objective, because I didn't want you to just be able to max score, control one, control two, control more right off the bat. I put my Dracolene deeper in than that, further towards my deployment, because I expected you to be aggressive and me to be the person responding to your aggression. And I made sure that I had a Knight Incantor in range, because he has Mystic Shield as a possible cast, and then Lightning Blast, which just, it has infinite range. It just targets the nearest visible thing. So no matter what, he was going to hit something with Lightning Blast. So this is a very, very defensive deployment from my end. I wanted to make sure that once you get off the boat, I could handle your cats and make sure and wipe them out. That would be the dream scenario for me, is survive the Tempestor drop, kill the cats in my turn, and go from there. Like I said, I did have Tempestors on the table, hoping to unleash hell, but I ended up putting them into reserve, because realizing that, oh, you could make me go first, and if I have the Tempestors on the table and I have to go first, my first turn does almost nothing. And if I get double turned, I just lose. Like, yeah, I can't allow a double turn to happen. So I have to keep them in reserve. And in case you force me to go first, I have aggression. I can score magical dominance very easily. I can spread out and deny you a good deep strike. There were options for me to go first here.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I thought as well. That's why I kind of nudged at you to just double check your deployments there, because when I saw the Tempestors on the table, I exactly thought that it is I could force you to go, or I could force you to go first. And if they're on the table, the Tempestors do have that limited threat range at that point, and it would put you... I know you're skilled enough to where it'd still be a tough game to get through, but it would
be a lot easier. Yeah,
it'd be a lot easier because you would have run the risk of overextending or exposing something at somewhere down the line there.
Yeah, yeah. So with that information, then you decided to go first, and is that the reason? Is it because I put the Tempestors in reserve that you decided to go first?
Yeah, because at that point, I don't have enough screening to zone your shooting out, and you're going to have pretty much carte blanche of what you want to shoot at, and probably do significant damages to some key pieces there. So I figured, let's just accelerate this, let's try to score something, or let's try to maximize my score early on, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, had you forced me to go first, probably what I would do is... drop the Tempestors on the right side between those two pieces of terrain on the top right objective. Put my, run some kind of screen up there the best I can. Force you to charge into it and then unleash hell on you. Not the right piece. I would have gone for the middle piece. Duh, that way I'm in range to shoot immediately. When you charge into me, obviously I unleash hell. I would also have all my wizards in range to unbind. And then if you don't have fight first, this game is over. Because... Like I said before, Stormcast Mirror is about trading hammers, and what Strike First does is my melee hammers can't touch your melee hammer. So I have to win the game by killing your Dracolines with shooting and with magic.
Yeah, it's kind of like having a hidden half hammer.
Yes, yeah. In that trading game, it's like you're playing rock, paper, scissors, and you just have the rock to my scissors, and I can't do anything about it. All right, so let's go over your first turn here. We can see how you broke out of your deployment, how your hero phase went. I believe you got everything, every one of your spells, every buff, except for translocation. I believe that was the only thing that failed.
Yep.
And you did do magical dominance, which is a good play because most of your wizards were out of range. Because I had the one Vexilar in range, you didn't bother casting Empower on the Dracolines just in case I unbound it. Smart move. So your Dracolines, as expected, they rode the boat into the middle of the board, and then they got off the boat and they went to the right side, my right side from my perspective. In response to that movement, I moved my Knight Vexilor. I believe I rolled a 5 or 6. I got a really big redeploy, and I moved him towards the edge, out of range of where your Dracolines could finish a charge and then reliably pile in and then deal the mortal wounds to him. So it seems like my Vexilor screening strategy worked very well here, because your Tempestors didn't drop near the Vanquishers there. They weren't able to shoot the Vanquishers, so you decided to drop in on the left side and take shots at the Fulminators. You found a nice choke point in the terrain, and you dropped a squad of 5 Liberators there. I love doing this tactic with Tempestors, being able to drop them in behind a screening unit in a choke point where your opponent can't just run around it. Feels really good. So the Tempestors are within 12 to shoot the Fulminators, but they are also behind the Liberators, who are more than 9 away from the Fulminators. So, great positioning there. Anything else we want to say about your movement in Hero Phase?
Yeah, movement's good there. Not much else to add. There is a bit of a fatal error that I ended up realizing. We'll talk about in the shooting phase.
Okay. So out of curiosity, why didn't you move any of your support heroes and units in the back there? So you left your Castellant, Relictor, and Storm Coven all the way at the edge of the board. Is this because you were worried about the Knight Vexilors dropping their meteors on you?
Yeah, I was still wary of them because you still had to throw those out somewhere. I wasn't sure where you're going to put them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now, if you moved up, I probably would have been range of two of those banners. Which would have been 2d3 mortal wounds to all 3 of those units, most likely.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so let's talk through how your shooting and combat went. So we'll take a look at how it looked at the end of the turn. your Dracolines, as expected, just barreled through. They killed all the Vanquishers, to which I responded with a call for aid to bring them back more than 9 inches away from you. And then you did all the mortal wounds into the Vanguard Hunters. I believe one of the Hunters swung at the cat. Just all the Blaze of Glory mortal wounds managed to kill one of the cats, which yep. That felt pretty good. That's a pretty high roll on Blaze of Glory.
When you're rolling 20 dice, right?
Yeah, it was 15 dice for the Vanquishers, and then 2 dice for that one hunter that was in range, and somehow all of those swung. I think I also unleashed on you and did like 2 damage. No, I didn't. No, I saved the command point for call for aid. That's right. On the left side, your shooting bounced right off my fulminators. I think you ended up doing only 1 or 2 wounds because I was in cover. I was able to all out defense, and against your Rend 1 shooting, I had a 2+ save.
Yeah. So for those who are wondering, what happened here was I completely forgot about cover rolls. I have nothing but utmost nice things to say about my local community here, but for some reason, what always ends up happening is people will play on terrain, they'll sit on terrain, and nobody thinks to include cover bonuses. So I saw those fulminators out there out in the open just being like, oh yeah, my Tepesh can shoot those off the table, and then not realizing that they were actually in cover and had +1 to save. And all defense gave them effectively a 2+ save roll.
Mm-hmm. And your mortal wounds, I think, only did like 2 or 3. It was a pretty low roll for Tempesters. They're usually doing somewhere around 4.
Yep.
So my call for aid, because my Vexilor was redeployed to the right side, I was able to call for aid wholly within 12 inches of him, and then keep the units more than 9 inches away from your Dracolines and more than 9 inches away from your Griffhounds. If you had a shooting unit, you could have shot me with the Griffhounds there from Warning Cry, but you didn't have one in range there. A fun thing that could have happened. That was your turn. You did score magical dominance. You got max score of 5 points. You went 5-0. How did you feel going into this turn, knowing that I was going next and I potentially could get 2 turns in a row? Did you feel like you had accomplished enough with your first turn?
I felt I was had a strong start, and I still felt pretty strong going to mill through your turn. I wasn't too worried initially with respect to the Dracolines, in terms of them getting lifted by anything, but yeah, there's a reason why that attitude changed towards middle of the turn.
Yes. Okay, so let's jump into my round 1. So I didn't take a photo of this, but we just drew some arrows from your previous photo there. So in the hero phase, I cast a whole bunch of spells, and I baited out all of your Unbinds, and I baited out your Knight and Cantor's Voidstorm Scroll by... we were flush with Primal Dice, by the way. We should mention this. I think we had like 5 Primal Dice this round. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And I used 2 of them to cast a Malevolent Maelstrom on like a 14, and that forced you to use your Voidstorm Scroll on the Knight and Cantor over there, because if the Maelstrom went off, I could have dropped it into your back line there with all your heroes and done a whole bunch of mortal wounds. As well as the Vexilor bombs, which were still waiting to be used. I also could have dropped it on the left side and pinged your mortal wounds, your Griffhounds, and your Liberators. So I baited out the Voidstorm Scroll, and then I baited out the Unbind on the Dracolines, and then I cast Merciless Blizzard with the Lord Arcanum. And he did 14 mortal wounds to the cats, killing off 3 of them, as you can see with that little illustration there. So that was a pretty big swing in the game for me, I would say, because those cats had +2 save pretty much all the time, because all at defense and Castellan Lantern. They also had fight first, so I couldn't touch them in melee. So that went about as well as it could have for me.
Yeah.
It also cleared them off the objective, which allowed me to drop my Tempesters in where I'm showing there.
I actually don't know if you wanted to put your Tempesters on there, though. Pretty sure you kept them off.
Oh, I did. I made sure they weren't touching the objective because I didn't want Fountains of Frost to activate and kill everything. I knew that I needed my Lord Arcanum on the objective, so I moved him forwards, making sure he was on the arcane terrain to get +1 to unbind within range of the Storm Coven, I believe, at that point. No, I think I'm still out of range of the Storm Coven, but at least the Knight and Cantor would be within unbinding range.
Yeah. So the one thing I will say is that play... of You put me in this position of needing to make the decision to use the Voidstorm Scroll on the Blizzard or the Maelstrom. And I will say this about my list. About 60% of my units are wizards, and I cannot afford having a Maelstrom popped in my face. So yep. I opted to go for that, and I was hoping that by some stretch I'd be able to get rid of the Blizzard, but I didn't have any Unbinds left.
Mm-hmm. That's how it goes, right?
Yep.
Because there's no guarantee I make the Blizzard. Maybe I roll a one and I don't want to risk a Primal Miscast while I'm standing next to all those long strikes. So it wasn't a wrong decision by any means.
Yeah.
So other movements here. I move my knight. I declared Intimidate the Invaders as my tactic, so I needed to get everything out of my territory, or most of my units out of my territory. Counting my units, I knew that I could drop Dracolines out, my Vanquishers would move up, my Knight Vexilor kept moving up the right side, so that he could score surround and destroy on a following turn. My Vanquishers moved up to charge the Griffhounds and take that objective. I first baited out redeploy by moving my Griff Chargers up to more than 3 inches away from your Liberators and your Tempesters there. You saw that maneuver I was going to do. I was going to charge over the wall into that little space that you have between the Liberator and the Tempester, and I was going to pile all the mortal wounds into your Tempesters. You saw that coming, and you redeployed away from it. Once the redeploy was used, I was able to move my Vanquishers on the right side up towards your Griffhounds and then get a 4-inch charge on them, which was great. Yep. My Fulminators moved up the left side to support my Dracolines so that the Fulminators could kill the Liberators and then the Dracolines could pile in towards the Tempesters. I moved both of my Locusts, my remaining Locusts on the left side, up to objectives because they count as 10 models each, and at this point you didn't have that many models left on the table, right? I made sure that... Sorry.
Yeah, I didn't have that many left on the table at that point.
Mm-hmm. I chose not to dispel Lauchon because he didn't really seem to be doing anything for you anymore. Maybe what you could have done with him is like move him back towards your Knight Incantor and then use him to teleport the Incantor around because it does count as 10 models. So that could have been a play, possibly.
What I ended up using for throughout the rest of the game was just sort of trying to for blocking potential on my competitors, but I had mixed results.
Mm-hmm. Right, well, after my movement phase was over, I shot at your Dracolines. You did manage to rally back one of them at the top of your turn. So this photo was taken, unfortunately, after your next turn started. It spoils a little bit that you did win priority in the following turn. You translocated back your Storm Coven into my territory so you could Aetherstruck your Dracolines and Mystic Shield them. And you did rally back one of them because one of the cardinal rules of Age of Sigmar is you always rally back Dracolines. That just always happens. So ending my turn, my Fulminators took a lot of damage from Liberators, and I believe they ate the Unleash from Tempesters as well. So they're down to one model with 4 wounds remaining. My Dracolines managed to kill 2 Tempesters, though, with a combination of melee attacks and the Mortal Wound Blast, so that felt pretty good. My 4 Fulminators dropped in, they did some damage, and they positioned such that your Dracolines would be forced to either charge the Long Strikes and get off the objective, or charge the Lord Arcanum and try to kill him, but in doing so, triggering an Unleash Hell from 4 Tempesters, which could possibly just wipe them out. I made sure to use a guaranteed Unbind on your Mystic Shield to make sure that your Dracolines were as squishy as possible, and I also unbound your Aethershock with a random Unbind in order to get rid of your fight first. My Vanquishers killed the Griffhounds. Didn't suffer any mortal wounds in return, and I scored a 5-point turn. I got my battle tactic, and I have 4 objectives. So then we roll for priority, and you win the roll. Why did you decide to go first in round 2?
I couldn't afford to give you the double at the end of the day.
That's fair. Given my positioning, if my Tempesters got to shoot at your Dracolines again, that probably would have been... that would have been it for them, and my Fulminator would have been able to charge your Tempesters. You can see he's currently more than 3 inches out, so a charge from a Fulminator probably would have sealed that unit. And like we talked about, those are your only 2 hammers, so if I can kill those 2 hammers, keeping at least one of mine alive, I pretty much win the game at that point.
The other thing I want to say about priorities is I just have like a few sort of cardinal rules. One is, if you have previous turn priority, I like to keep that priority because it controls the flow of the game. and two, or two, unless it's going to win you the game, just don't take the double. So even if it's only take the double if it's going to put you into like a winning position. Otherwise, just it's more important to actually keep that sort of flow of priority going.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because you don't want to risk being doubled later.
Yeah.
Going back
And
and forth constantly prevents double turns from happening. And if you can just keep the game in an I go, you go state, it's more predictable and easier to manage.
the only other sort of thing to work into those axioms is also depends on the battle plan. Like the only situation where I would usually choose to opt to go second in a situation would be something like a Jaws or a Prize of Galat. Because of this battle plan not really offering anything other than a locus focus, I just opted to protect myself or try to get more points or try to maximize my score at the end of the day.
Oh, I suppose I should also mention how my Vexilor banners did and my Thunderbolt Volley. They all whiffed. They pretty much all whiffed. Rolled very low. There weren't very many targets in range. I think my volley, I ended up shooting like one shot into your encounter. One guy was able to see you. Didn't want to shoot into the Dracolines because they had plus two saves and and they had Azurite Halo, so I could actually end up taking more damage than ideal. Didn't and then I think I shot like one into your Tempestors and one into your Encanter and they whiffed. So terrible, terrible hero phase for me overall, aside from that Merciless Blizzard.
I don't know if you would have been able to shoot the Tempestors just because of the Wildwood positioning.
I don't remember where the shots went. I just remember the Thunderbolt Volley did literally nothing.
Yeah, I remember the Wildwood positioning frustrating you on the long strikes.
Yeah, and I did that to myself. I put those tokens there. Well, my goal with it was maybe deploy units behind it, and then screen you out so you couldn't shoot anything important if you dropped your Tempestors exactly behind that terrain. But that proved to be far more difficult than I thought it would have been. All right, so let's talk round two. Where the Dracolines go, James?
He got unleashed.
Yeah, they got a big Unleash Hell. Because you didn't have fight first, your Tempestors opted to fight. Because I think I killed two Dracolines off the Unleash, leaving you with one who was just in range to fight the Lord Arcanum. You opted to fight with two Tempestors over on the left side before I fought you with my Dracolines. And that you did kill one of the Dracolines, which was a good move. But then somehow my Lord Arcanum, I think he had Finest Hour at the time, decided to just finish off the remaining Dracoline like a Chad. And then my Dracolines killed your Tempestor on my turn. And yeah, you weren't able to secure the bottom right objective because my Arcanum counts as 10 models because he's a locus on this battle plan. That counts as 10. Your Storm Coven only counts as one. So you had one, you had two, but you didn't have more. You did get your battle tactic to intimidate, which was good. Yeah, so this is how your turn ended. You ended up with 9 points and you did have the one Tempestor. I guess we can just go right into my turn here. On my turn, I scored Surround and Destroy using the Long Strikes, wholly within 6 inches of the backfield, the Knight Vexilor 6 inches on the right, and the Tempestors, or sorry, and the Vanquishers 6 inches in your territory. I was able to also contest the objective by casting the Dais and running my Lord Arcanum, because he's a locus, he counts as 10 models. I was able to hold that objective again. I charged my Fulminator to kill your Griffhounds. Dracolines finished off your Tempestors, shot off the Storm Coven, and that was it, right? Max score, and all you had left on the table was a smattering of support heroes in your territory.
Yeah, and at that point, I think that's when I think we rolled priority and we just decided to talk it out from there.
Yeah, at this point, the writing was on the wall, and you were ready to concede, but we decided because this is the Store League, good sportsmanship would be to try to allow you to score as many battle tactics as you could possibly do, and then see if we could still score grand strategies and all that stuff. So I did end up taking a max score on this one of 28, and we determined that you would have been able to, on your turn three, you wouldn't have been able to score anything, but on round four, if you dropped in the remaining unit of Vanquishers and translocated your priest, you could have done surround, and then you also could have scored lead into the Maelstrom because you had a hero and a battle line unit. So we ended up counting that as a total score of 19 to my 28.
Well, round three, what happened was I went for Magical Mayhem trying to kill the Vanquishers.
Oh yeah, I had a dispel scroll in range. I still had my I used the voice door, but I had a ton of primals. That's what it was.
It was either that, or I just failed to get the cast off in general.
Yeah, that's what it is. I've used so many blizzards lately; they're all starting to blend together. So that's the game. Hopefully, this has been useful for you guys. There was a lot of very intricate positioning required here. I know it's a little anticlimactic to have a 2-round game kind of determined, but a lot of this was based off the deployment around the specific actions in the first turn. And then that big blizzard killing 3 cats really made it a lot easier for me. Because let's say you survive that Unleash Hell against the Pesters with 3 of your Dracolines, that would have been a very different game right there. You killed the Lord Arcanum, Tempesters pile in and maybe don't even do enough damage. It's just a very different game at that point. That blizzard was definitely the big swing point.
Yeah. Sort of my 2 takeaways from this game were that 1, Merciless Blizzard is a powerful enough spell that it just changes the tempo of the game altogether. And 2, I value Storm Coven a little bit more than we gave it in our tier list, just because of the ability to give a defensive fight first. In the context of the mirror, that's huge, especially when we define the mirror as something as simple as trading down hammers. It just completely redefines how that game's played.
Well, with that in mind, I think what you could have done this game instead of sending your Dracolines to the right side to contest my shooting, which, to be fair, that is the thing that would counter you, is shooting and magic, right? So you tried to take that out, which makes sense. But what if you had sent your Dracolines onto the left side to take out my melee? The only thing I would have in range to, you know, charge you on my turn would have been my own Dracolines, and I can't fight into your Dracolines because you had Aether Shock. Then if you drop your Tempestors in there, and instead of going for the right side, you just dominated that left side, you killed all my melee hammers, I would be left with, you know, Dracolines that can't fight, Tempestors dropping into play to shoot your Tempestors, and Long Strikes. And that's a very different game when you don't count my Fulminators being in the game anymore.
Yeah, I'm not sure why I didn't, I don't know why I was so fixated on that right side rather than the left side.
It's logical, right? Like, the thing that's going to kill your Dracolines is the Long Strikes and Merciless Blizzard. So you should try to go kill it. Did you maybe just not realize that I wouldn't be in your threat ranges if you went over there? Like, I definitely survived because of my deployment.
I think so. But I mean, at the same time, if I take out those 2 hammers over, or if I tie down or take down those 2 hammers over there, then it's a completely different game.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe you're also worried about the 3D3 blast from the Vexillors, and you kind of saw it as I can't move up until the Vexillors are dead. So you saw a situation where you could kill 2 of them and lock down my shooting and my magic.
Yeah, that's what I think it was at the end of the day. It was more so there's more threats in concentrating in this area versus the other area.
Right, and because your hammer is so durable, right, +2, +3 save sometimes, strike first and Azerite Halo, trying to fight into that would be very difficult for me.
Yep.
Okay, I can see all that.
We're also coming up on 2 weeks of playing this game, so...
it's been a little while since we played this match. We gotta try to do these the same week we play the game. Okay, so hopefully this has been a useful and interesting video. We got a lot of great feedback on our previous battle report. Please let us know in the comments down below and on our Discord server what you think about this game. We are going to keep using this format. Seems like there's demand for people who want a more analytical, discussion-based approach to a game. So thank you to all our viewers and especially our Patreon supporters. If you think we missed anything or our analysis is lacking, please leave a comment down below the video. If you want to talk about AOS, then join the Stormkeep Discord server. We host painting contests regularly. We post our models. We talk about list building for all armies, not just Stormcast. We have a lot of dedicated Order, Death, Chaos, and Destruction players. And we have a battle report forum. James actually just posted a game in there against Coalesced Seraphon using this same list. So if you want to see more out of the Dracolines and what they can do when they're not facing a Stormcast mirror, go check that out in the battle report section.
Thundercats versus Thunder Lizards.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet. I hope it's good. You can consider supporting us by becoming a member on YouTube or joining us on patreon.com/stormkeep. For $5 a month, you get early access to videos, You get access to the slides that we use in all our podcasts. And for a little bit more, you can get access to a private list workshop where maybe you got a GT coming up and you need to put the finishing touches on your list to get that last little bit to go for 5-0. And we can offer that to you. Coming up next on the podcast, we have an updated Seraphon tier list featuring Caleb from Caleb Hastings. We also have a Season 3 list building video. This one was going to be coming out a bit sooner, but the Cities of Sigmar book really threw a wrench in the works, you know? Kind of whack. All our lists are out of whack now that the Battle Mage is a little bit different. There's some new Coalition and Ally stuff going on, so that video is a little bit delayed. And we've also started working on our How to Counter Khorne video, so look forward to all of that in the near future. So one last time, thank you everybody for watching. I hope this video was useful. Let us know what you think in the comments, and we'll see you in the next one.
Take it easy, folks.